Hello, everyone, and welcome to the American Ninja Warrior Wrap-Up. I am your host, Taryn Armstrong, and I am here, as always, with the amazing Lita. Lita, how are you?
I am doing okay, Taryn. It is my first day of school, my last first day of school today. So
last first day of school, interesting.
Yes, I'm a senior in college.
Well, you never know. You might do more school, right?
Yeah, we'll see. For now, it is my last first day of school, so that's exciting. How are you?
I'm great. You know, I'm doing about as well as I can, considering what we just saw in that episode.
Yeah.
Somebody tweeted me, "Hey, Brent," because Brent wears a veil in his profile picture on Twitter. Brent is a podcaster who podcasts with me on the Big Brother podcast. And he wore the veil because of an unfortunate circumstance that happened in Big Brother. And somebody was like, "Hey, Taryn, you need to borrow that veil from Brent after watching this episode." And I concur.
Yeah, it was upsetting. I joked that I was going to have my boxed wine ready, but it is 4 p.m., so that would be maybe even a little too much for me.
Terrible. Let's get right into this because, we saw the last episode. It was kind of disappointing seeing a lot of the people who went out, and then we saw this episode and we were hoping, you know, maybe this is going to be better. Maybe more people are going to make it in, and everything's going to be okay. And, no, everything's not going to be okay. Everything's going to be terrible.
Everything
is terrible. Life sucks. We're dead here.
Oh my God. We don't want to give people the wrong impression. There are some of our faves who did make it. Well, we'll be very happy for them. We just have to get through a couple of these heartbreakers.
Yeah, basically. I mean, there were enough people that made it through that I'm still looking forward to stage two and beyond. But man, that snake run, it just hurts me.
Yeah, I vote for that to not be involved in the future.
All right. So first up was Christy Pratt, the 22-year-old personal trainer. She is the machine. When you read out the wildcard entries, I was like, yeah, she's the machine. And you couldn't remember. But
I remembered her wedding dress. Yes. Yeah, I remember her doing the salmon ladder in her wedding dress.
And I did notice that something that I thought was funny was that in her package, she basically just talked about how she has now recruited her husband in American Ninja Warrior training. And I thought that was very funny.
Yeah, Mr. Machine. Michael spelled M-I-C-K-E-L.
I hadn't even noticed.
Well, there you go. Something that I noticed during Christy Pratt's run was that, and they said this a couple times, but they kept referring to the propeller bar as always a challenge for female athletes. Is that something that we buy? Is that specifically hard for female athletes? Because I feel like we saw the propeller bar give everybody trouble.
It does give everybody trouble, but I think it tends to be something that takes out a lot of women. I don't know if that's specifically because that obstacle is challenging specifically for women, or if it's just like the first really challenging obstacle and like therefore a lot of women happen to go out on it.
I think it might be really challenging for short people.
Yeah, definitely. You have to get more height. The shorter your arms are, the harder it's going to be to grab the propeller. And then also you need like longer limbs to grab the rope after you've got onto the propeller. So definitely a harder one for shorter people.
Yeah. But other than that, I mean, she was working pretty methodically, probably too slow, even if she did make it to the end, in my opinion. But she unfortunately is the first to go out on the jumping spider. She sort of sticks it, but she's just at the widest point.
Yeah, she hit kind of far back on the trampoline and wasn't able to get enough distance into the wall, or the walls, I should say, before she spread out and kind of tried to lock it in. And unfortunately, that just means she goes down.
Unfortunately. But next, we have one of your faves.
Yes, Nick Hansen, the 28-year-old coach. He is the Eskimo Ninja. He had a package about how he trains people in his village. And I was pretty scared to see him second in this lineup. So I didn't have super high hopes, but I did think I honestly thought, like, you know, we didn't see Christy Pratt get very far. I feel like he'll get further in the course, but I think he'll still fail. And that's pretty much what we saw, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, this episode really took your note from last week where you said that you like to see people time out more often.
Yes.
That was a really cruel thing for you to bring into the universe. You should not have said that.
I still prefer, I much prefer the timeouts to all of these like just small little mistakes where people like, oops, I dipped my foot into the water at the log grip, or like, oops, I slipped on the snake run. It's like, ah, that's so, that sucks to watch. And I know that timing out sucks to watch, but at least you know, like that was them. Like that was, they ran the course. They gave it their all, but they couldn't do it fast enough. And I there's at least something there, right? As opposed to just like, whoop, little slip.
Yeah, I do wish that they had spread out these timeouts between the episodes. Seemed like all of the timing out was in this episode.
Yeah, and it was a weird one because it was either like, yeah, they're definitely going to time out, or almost definitely they're not going to time out. Like there weren't a whole lot of close calls in this one.
Yeah, that's true. The other thing I noticed about Nick was that, and with Christy as well, that I was noticing throughout the night was that everyone here knew to get off of the log grip on the backswing,
yeah.
Which I think lends credence to the fact that the episodes have something to do with when they go, because it looked like every single person did that and had seen people do it before, whereas in the last episode, not everybody did that.
Yeah, and Nick Hansen in particular uses the even slower technique on the log grip where you go all the way down, you swing forward, and then come all the way back, and then go again back toward the mat very slowly. It's probably the most effective technique at successfully accomplishing or successfully completing this obstacle, but it is a lot slower. And we saw people do it in the last episode, but they were very, very fast competitors. Nick Hansen uses this technique, loses a lot of time. And in my notes, I'm like, oh man, he has a slower pace here. This is a little risky to use this technique. And unfortunately, that really did come to bite him because as you mentioned, he times out in the end. So using these slower techniques, you need to be able to make up for it afterward or even beforehand to make sure that you're not going to waste too much time.
Yeah, I mean, he has an amazingly effective warped wall and broken bridge, but the jumping spider is really messy. Akbar says that there aren't a lot of spiders in Alaska. That's probably why. So I'm considering moving to Alaska after college.
And speaking of the broken bridge, Akbar says, ooh, wiggling like jello there.
That's his favorite thing.
So there you go. Definitely wasn't a fat joke. It's just it's just the broken bridge. We can clear that up. Akbar does not hate fat people.
Did he really say wiggling? I feel like it's usually jiggling when referring to jello.
Oh, no, I think he said wiggling.
That's so weird thing to say.
Wiggling like jello. Yeah.
Anyway, so he gets there and now you can see the time. Was that happening on the last episode or is that new?
It was on the last episode. Yeah, I don't know if it was last season, though. I feel like typically you don't have a visual representation yourself. It's kind of off to the side and you have to rely on people being like, go. You have no time. Or with the klaxon coming on.
Yeah. Do you like that? Do you like that they can see the last 30 seconds?
I do. I always, it's just like the sort of like when they slip up and it's just a small little mistake. It's unfortunate to see it. It usually happens in Sasuke where they think that they have a lot of time left, but they don't. And then because of that, they just kind of leisurely, you know, walk toward the final obstacle. And then the klaxon sounds like, oh my God, I thought I had more time than this. And then they fail when they could have succeeded. So I do like that they have that, especially at the end, maybe not as much in the beginning where they can't see it. I think that's kind of the right call. I think right at the end is the perfect time to be like, oh man, this is how much time I have. I need to book it.
But I feel like it can also be even more nerve-wracking for people who are already under a ton of pressure.
I do like the fact that like it is nerve-wracking though. Like they really have to go for it and you know, kick it into high gear. And I like seeing that urgency right at the end.
Yeah, that's fair.
Next up was Brent Stephenson, and gotta be honest, I didn't have super high hopes for him here. I know that he was very successful last season, but again, he came really early in the episode, and he's not the most consistent athlete that the sport has seen.
Yeah, and we get another package about him and Casey's relationship being complicated.
I literally wrote down, his package is about the Casey breakup again. Ouch. So he literally every single package he's gotten this season has been about Casey and the breakup. And Casey has not had a single package about the breakup. I feel like Brent really gets shafted here.
Yeah. Well, honestly, it's nice once in a while to have a man's package be all about a woman. Because I feel like we get a lot of women's packages being like, I got engaged, or like, I started training with this man who made me realize that I could be an athlete.
Well, there you go. You get some revenge.
So it's nice to see it backwards for once. But yeah, I also didn't have high expectations for Brent after that package. Matt gives a really hot take where he says he thinks that stage one will be important for Brent.
Oh, yeah. It's
that's why they pay him.
Yeah, I'm really glad we got that info. Yeah, so he basically, you know, he gets on the log grip and he misjudges how much space that he has on the mat. It's because, you know, it looks like more than half of his body is over the mat. So I think he feels like, okay, this is great. I have enough space. He pushes off from the log. And unfortunately, I think the mat probably sinks in a lot more than he expected it to. And so his even though just his legs are over the water, he ends up just falling straight down into the water from the mat. And out goes Brent.
Yeah, if you don't land dead center on something that is floating in the water that is already wet and slippery, I mean, there's no chance. It's so easy to slide off of this.
And it's so high up that you have so much momentum coming down. And not only that, but he pushed himself off coming down. So like there's just a whole lot of force coming onto that slippery surface, and out he goes. Next up was John Stewart, the 54-year-old construction worker, and talk about mean packages. I feel like this one was just all about, like, back when John Stewart was a child, a movie theater ticket was 89 cents, and isn't he just the most ancient person we've ever seen?
Yeah, well, we talk a lot about how there's kind of a battle of the generations this season, and how they've hyped up the younger people a lot more. So this was sort of a slap to the face of Jon Stewart. I mean, it was funny. It was short. They didn't at least belabor it super long, but it was kind of insulting.
Yeah, and unfortunately for Jon Stewart, he gets a bad jump on the tramp for the propeller bar, and he's still, this was really impressive to me. When I watched this, I was like, whoa, because he grabs on to the edge of the propeller bar and manages to make the transfer onto the rope, but then he's not able to keep his grip on the rope because the transfer was so fast, and he falls. So I was like, whoa, like, oh man, that was just a roller coaster of emotions, and down goes Jon Stewart. That's all, basically all there is.
Yeah, he has a good attitude. I saw him tweeting today about how he is never going to give up, and he will hopefully be back next year because of that attitude.
I agree. I hope that he does come back. Next up is our first montage, and first up was Yuri Force, the air traffic controller who had a rough landing at the propeller bar. Then was Jackson Meyer, the Eagle Scout, your favorite competitor, and I'm sure you were very upset to see him fail because he wasn't prepared for Snake Run.
I think this is the only time I've ever written LOL in my notes.
Then finally, Clayton Wolf, who came out howling, but ends up failing on the log grip. Next we got John Alexis Jr., the Giant. I was really looking forward to his run. But we come in late to him, right?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. And, I mean, he did get a nice little Akbarism. Akbar says, B5-fo, look at Alexis go.
Oh yeah. But he is 6'6" and they do not want us to forget it.
I don't think it's possible to forget it. He looks very winded at the top of the warped wall, and you could tell that he was really starting to run out of gas. And unfortunately, it catches up to him on the flying squirrel, and he is not able to make that transfer. He didn't seem like he was able to like get enough momentum going, either because he was just too winded, or I think it might have been more difficult for him because of how tall he is and how long his limbs are. But Akbar, I think, is the most disappointed of anyone when he falls. Akbar is just like, he's so upset. He's like, no, no.
Yeah. Well, it also probably didn't help that the coming off of the broken bridge, he like broke his face. He like ran into it at the end of the obstacle. He like fell over and looked really dazed.
Yeah. To be fair, I feel like most people broke their face to the broken bridge, but yeah, definitely he seemed to get one of the worst shots to the head.
Yeah. I mean, that's a long way for someone who's 6'6" to fall down. Oof. Like in any capacity, that is a long way to go.
The bigger they are, the harder they fall.
Yeah.
It's a little catchphrase I made up.
Oh
yeah.
Thought you were just a big Pitbull and Kesha fan.
Next up was Josh Levin, the 22-year-old engineering student. I noticed in this episode, a lot of engineering people taking on Ninja Warrior. I feel like they're the next rock climbers.
I hope not. no, I'm a big fan of Josh Levin. He did an internship at NASA, which is apparently every little kid's dream come true. Not mine, Taryn.
Well, what's wrong with you?
I don't love the science people as much as you do. I think that's not my speed. But
blasphemy.
He says that engineering and Ninja Warrior are very similar in that I can do neither of them.
Yeah, and they also mentioned, they didn't really talk about it in the package, but Matt says as he's competing or as he's running the course, he says, yeah, Josh Levin, who was a speed climber, a champion speed climber, actually one of the most decorated climbers in the U.S. Yeah, actually, he's won 19 championships as a speed climber. it kept elevating. Like, why didn't you just start off at the top here?
Like, actually, I'm looking closer at my notes. Actually, yeah. Also, a Northeastern graduate. So look out for him in your neck of the woods.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I creeped him on Twitter. I wanted to find out if he was Jewish.
And?
I didn't find out, and I thought that I couldn't just, like, tweet him that.
Hey, Josh, I was just wondering. I'm a huge fan. Great job on the Ninja Warrior course, but are you Jewish by any chance?
It's important. I was just wondering.
I'm making a podcast about the best Jewish American Ninja Warrior competitors, and I just needed to know.
It's less of a podcast and more of just like a couple sound clips. It's pretty short.
Yes, Josh, he uses that slow log grip technique, but he realizes that he needs to make up the time. And so he goes straight into the jumping spider and speeds through it. He does stumble at the warped wall, but still makes it up, which I thought was very impressive. And he does look a bit winded by the end of the course, but he does manage to finish. And he is our first finisher of the night.
Yeah. And Akbar says something really weird where he says, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, but this won't stay in Vegas because the revolution will be televised. Look at this guy. That is so many things.
I wanted to write that down, but I was so confused about what he was talking about that I was just like, I can't.
Yeah, he could have said this about anyone. This like wasn't specific to Josh. So like, I don't know why he said it at all, let alone at this moment. It was very confusing. It made me laugh out loud, though.
I like Josh. I like Josh a lot, and I was glad to see him finish here. I'm excited to see what he'll do in stage two.
Yes, me as well.
Next up, we have another montage. First was Tiana Weberly, who was on Team Ninja Warrior. She is the sort of protege of Flip Rodriguez, so to speak. And they said that this waitress got served by the propeller bar.
It works for like a waitress or a lawyer or a judge or a criminal.
There's only so much they can do here.
Yeah.
Next up was Grant Clinton, who had a stroke and almost died. Which is the way that they just love to describe him every single time he runs. Unfortunately, he does fail early here at Snake Run.
I really thought that you were saying that like the Akbarism was like, who had a stroke out on the Snake Run. I was like, did they really say that?
They should have, right? Like, he had a stroke and almost died, and unfortunately had another stroke as he failed the Snake Run.
A stroke of bad luck. Okay, that was probably too off color.
Finally, Brett Sims, who times out at the warped wall. Unfortunate for him. I wish we would have seen Brett's run. I think he's been with the show for so long, and the timeout at the warped wall is one of the classics. You know, you get so exhausted from the stage that you are not able to get up the warped wall, and then you time out. So I would have liked to have seen that, but there's only so much we can do, I suppose. Next up was Jezel Bozeman. He was another tall one, as he takes on this course. What did you think of Jezel?
I think it's Jezel.
Jezel, that's it. Jezel.
Yes. He was good. I was actually expecting him to finish, until he kind of was taking a lot of time on the broken bridge. And then he does this beautiful somersault, but I imagine that's a little bit dizzying and needed to take some time. So he was one of those people who also got to the Flying Squirrel and missed the transition. I feel like this episode was weird because I feel like we had so much more failing on the back end of the course than we had in the last episode.
That flying squirrel is a huge like game changer as far as the amount of difficulty at the end of the course. You know, it used to be the like a swing to the cargo net, and then they did change it to be those sort of monkey bar things. But the flying squirrel is even more difficult, and that's something that I don't think that a lot of athletes are prepared for, because the end is usually just a matter of finishing in time rather than having to do another really difficult obstacle right at the end. But yeah, we saw a lot of failure here, and Jessel is one of them. You know, he gets there, he's very tired. I think, again, he has those long limbs. It's a little harder for him to control his body to build up momentum. And he does. He goes down here. But we did, in the meantime, get to have an Akbarism on the sonic curve. He says, "Oh, the sonic curve. Get the sonic boom for your Bose headset."
I don't really know what that means, but it's Bozeman. No, I get the pun. I don't know what a Bose headset is.
Bose. They're like one of the most famous like audio headphone companies.
Do I look like I'm interested in headphone brands?
You're literally wearing headphones right
now. Yeah, I'm wearing the earbuds that came with my like 2007 iPod. Probably.
You've never like been in a mall and have people be like, "Oh, try the headphones. They're Bose." That's my mall salesman voice.
Yeah, that was really offensive. to mall salesmen. No, I don't know. Sorry, what are you going
to
say?
Well, I wanted to point out the thing that I liked the most about Jessel, and the thing that made me really want to root for him, was he did the Bunpei Shiratori one-legged jump into the spider jump.
The jumping spider.
Jumping spider.
The spider jumping spider.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
They even replayed it. He jumped with one leg on the trampoline straight into the jumping spider. And this is the move that Bunpei Shiratori does in Sasuke. He is famous for it. He is also very long-limbed. He was a track star. And he used to always go into the jumping hang, the jumping spider, whatever it was. This obstacle, he would always run off just like super impressive, always fun to watch. And really, I think if you're capable of doing it, it's a more a consistent way of getting the right kind of jump, because having to rely on the two-footed approach is kind of dangerous if you don't hit it just right. Whereas when you can do it with one leg, you're able to kind of control your jump a lot more. But I guess not a lot of people have the limb length to accomplish this. But I was very happy to see it. It reminded me of Bunpei. So I like Jessel a lot because of that.
Well, it's not the last time we're going to hear Akbar say sonic curve, sonic boom, something with that. So at least we can rest assured that he reuses that one a lot.
I'm very, very reassured. Next up was Mac Rush, the 28-year-old construction worker. He was the king of obstacles. He wore the crown, and Matt and Akbar agreed to wear a crown if he finished the course. And honestly, this made me think, oh, maybe he finishes the course. Maybe they wouldn't bring it up if he didn't finish the course. But no, he doesn't finish the course.
Yeah. Well, crown is a loose term. These are like little Burger King, like, cardboard things.
I was like, are they really wearing Burger King? No, I guess not. Maybe he might like painted over the branding or something.
Yeah, I feel like Burger King would be a poor sponsor of American Ninja Warrior. I feel like you cannot brand them as crazy healthy.
The crazy healthy Mac, what is it?
Whopperito run of the night.
Yeah. But yes, he is the heaviest competitor to ever run in Vegas at 220 pounds. And despite this, very agile, goes through Snake Run very quickly. But when he goes into the jumping spider, his foot slips. It might have had a little bit of water on it from the log grip, and he goes down into the water.
Indeed. And we say goodbye to the king of obstacles. Does this mean that someone else gets to be the king? Does he have to bequeath it?
Yeah, he has to abdicate to who? Jake Murray, I guess, probably is now the king of obstacles.
Okay. That's fine.
I mean, that's just how it works.
I don't really know why, but
because he got the fastest time.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Next, we get another montage. Anthony DeFranco is up first, and he fails at the jumping spider. Then we get Andrew Lowe's, who lost his focus at Sonic Curve.
And finally, he's a photographer. I remember that one.
Thank you.
Just letting people know. Because that would be a mean thing to say if it didn't have anything to do with his job. It's just like, this guy lost his focus.
Well, I hope I don't lose my focus in any of my shoots. And then finally, Brittany Reed, who is the tallest female competitor in Vegas this year, but comes up short at the propeller bar.
Indeed.
Then we have Natalie Duran, the 24-year-old clinical researcher. Her package is about how she is a YouTuber. Her family wanted her to be something that is not YouTubing. I was going to say doctor, but I wasn't sure. She says she's not the black sheep. She is the rainbow sheep of her family.
Yeah, I really liked this package because, you know, in case people don't remember why she was talking about this, she comes from an Asian American family and there are a lot of cultural expectations of her that she has defied. And this was the first time that her parents are actually coming to watch her run and they look really excited. And she's talking about how important it is for her parents to be proud of her for something that isn't academic. And I always like when people speak to sort of different cultures or groups that they represent on the show because diversity is such an important part of it. So I loved this package from her. It wasn't just, you know, it combined that sort of package that she's gotten the whole time where she's just like, ah, I'm weird, blah, but like had little more of a backstory behind it.
Yes. Unfortunately, though, not much of a run on the course. She does not get enough height on the propeller bar and goes into the water.
Yeah, I was surprised by this, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really expecting her. She was one of the people who, you know, we talked about the wild cards being all women and, you know, what that might entail. But she was one of the people who I really was hoping would be a wild card because I felt like she had a lot more to show. So I was very disappointed by this.
Yeah, honestly, whenever anyone gets to the propeller bar, I kind of expect them to fail if they're not somebody like Joe Morofsky, just because it's such an obstacle with so many different variables that are like almost out of your control. Like you have to hit the trampoline just right. Like there's no margin for error on this one. And then you have to grab onto this awkwardly shaped propeller. And then you have to grab onto the rope with your legs usually. Which, you know, if you miss it, you can push the rope away from you and then you have to come around a few times and then you have to, you know, land on the platform safely. And there's just so many different things that can go wrong here between the jump, grabbing onto it, holding onto it, grabbing onto the rope. There are so many ways to just, you know, one little mistake, you slip up and you're done. And it's not my favorite obstacle, to be honest. I've liked other ones better, but yeah, it's always kind of, this is the obstacle, probably the obstacle more than any other obstacle that I watch somebody go up to the propeller bar and I'm like, oh, this is where they could fail.
I think I also felt that way about the log grip, which is maybe why these episodes were so tough to watch is because it's that 1-2 punch of these really high variable obstacles. That, you know, not everything is necessarily based on how strong or capable you are. There's just so many factors.
Yeah, I do think that is sort of the reason why there were a lot of veteran failures. And I mean, not just that, but also they didn't ask a lot of the veterans back. I think that also had something to do with it. But it was the veteran failures. And I think that combined with the fact that they failed because of little slip ups here and there. It was all, you know, none of the veterans failed because they weren't good enough, right? Like they didn't fail because they didn't properly train for a particular thing. Almost all of them just slipped either on Snake Run or the log grip or the propeller bar. They talked about how most of those big athletes, they failed in the first three obstacles. And that's why, because of just little slip ups. And I think it was partly bad luck and it was partly the design of the obstacles where I feel like, especially Snake Run, where those platforms are a little bit wobbly, I feel like that's sort of why we got this disappointing result. And I hope that they learn from it and change for the future.
Yes, me as well. And it looks like you got another one of your wishes, which is that it looks like stage two is completely redesigned for next
Hopefully.
Week. So from the little preview that they gave.
Although that body prop, oh man. That looks impossible.
Oh, really? I didn't look at it that closely.
It looked like it was curved. And like the body prop is one of the most difficult obstacles in all of Ninja Warrior or American Ninja Warrior. And if that is what it looks like, then I'm scared for these athletes.
We shall have to see.
Next up was Adam Rail, the 23-year-old concrete worker. And I was wondering, because we didn't get a package about his concrete working, is this the concrete barber or is he just a worker?
I had the same thought. I don't know.
Great. Now we'll never know.
I'll tweet him later.
His package was about his over-enthusiastic mother And I feel like a lot of athletes got this package where it's like, yeah, my mom is crazy on the sidelines.
Yeah, but his mom is like from Minnesota or something. She sounded like she was from Fargo. It's like, I'm so emotional. I'm a basket case.
Why aren't you on Fargo?
I don't know. They didn't get my letters.
Not enough of a basket case?
I don't know.
He's one of only six walk-ons in Vegas. And he waited 2 weeks in the walk-on line. I thought this was surprising that there were only six walk-ons. I feel like typically we have a little bit more, but maybe that's just me remembering incorrectly.
I don't know.
But yes, he has a very slow and measured pace and really not a whole lot to say about his run. He finishes the course. I believe this is the second finish of the night and just pretty impressive.
Yeah, I also have very little to say about this. I mean, it was a flawless run.
Yeah.
And it not even like a nail biter. I mean, right?
No, not really.
Yeah. So I feel like it was they call, you know, we'll get to Drew Dreschel in a second, but they call that a masterclass. But I feel like, you know, we have a couple in a row here who are really fantastic, which is weird that they put them in a row, right?
Yeah, very. It was definitely strange. I feel like we got two of the strongest runs of the night back to back. Anyway, next up, we get an interview with Jeff Britton, which I thought, OK, this is seeming OK. You know, even though they're hyping up this stage one run a lot more than I want them to be, I was like, all right, you know, he's getting the interview like Jesse Graf got the interview. Hopefully this means OK things. It was basically the same thing. They basically ask him the same question every single time they interview him, which is like, how do you deal with the pressure of being the first American Ninja Warrior competing again?
And he seems so over it.
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, I've answered this about 1,000 times before, but I, you know, I go out there, I try to have fun, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's not even just like, you know, usually people have to deal with the same question over and over because they're getting interviewed through multiple outlets, media outlets. But in this case, it's literally the same person on the same show, like this every single interview. Like, can we get another story with him, please, somewhere?
Yeah, if we ever get Jeff Britton on the podcast, we will not ask that question.
So, Jeff, we've been really curious. How do you handle all the pressure from being the first American Ninja Warrior? I feel like this is a really underreported thing.
Yeah, must be tough to be Jeff Britton.
Next up was Drew Dreschel, the 27-year-old gym owner. And he has another package about all the pressure that's getting put on him as a successful competitor, as somebody who trains and tries to inspire children. And this is starting to worry me. There's all this talk about Drew having pressure on him. Like, why? What's happening? Why is he getting this package?
I don't know. I mean, we're seeing this new super confident Drew this year. And
well, that's the thing, because he keeps having the packages about being really nervous and having a bunch of pressure. But then when they interview him, he's like, yeah, I'm going to kill this.
Yeah.
I'm beating the whole thing. I have no weaknesses. I'm good.
Yeah, that is a bold thing to say. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was also a lot about like, because I guess if you're a successful ninja now, you like have to work with children. That is like in your contract. it was about them. I was glad to see there weren't any girls in the gym that he trains in the package. But I was glad to see when he brought all the kids out in the crowd, there were some girls there. So always happy to see that. Want to see the next generation of female ninjas. I was just skeptical at first because I was like,
oh man, this Drew, I don't see any girls here. Maybe he only trains boys.
You know, you never know. Some places like that, you know, I don't think that Drew would do this. This is nothing against Drew's character. I just mean maybe that there are some gyms that are only for one gender. I don't know.
Well, that seems quite silly to me. It seems like they would be turning away much needed money. Anyway, Drew obviously does very well here. It looks like he gets his shoes a little bit wet at the log grip because there's a huge splash as he comes down, but that doesn't really hinder him in any way when he gets on the jumping spider. And the rest of the course is pretty textbook. He clears and like he says in the interview, has no weaknesses.
Yeah. His body control is ridiculous. Like,
oh, yeah.
So many people, when they come off of that Sonic curve, they're swinging on that rope and they have to go back and forth at least once. He just like somehow stops his body. He just like halts. I don't understand how that's possible.
Well, he has that great technique where right as he gets there, he uses his back foot to lock in on that platform. And he would be very good at this obstacle because this is the one that he completely like destroyed his leg on in Japan when he, his first trip to Japan, his first, you know, take on any sort of course, really any sort of real course. And he shattered something in his leg, and had to have a lot of intense physical therapy to come back into fighting form. And, you know, now you wouldn't even know because, he just dominates. But, I think that, this obstacle in particular, he's going to be really good at because he does not want to do that to his leg ever again.
Yeah. And I do want to mention, going back all the way to like one of our first podcasts this season, we both agreed that if someone was going to do it this year, it's going to be Drew Dreschel. So we're still holding on. Much like Akbar, we are Drew believers. That was such a bad one from him.
Anyway, next up, we have a football ad.
Yeah.
How's that?
Are you ready for football, Taryn?
I am not ready for football. I hate football season. It interrupts my Big Brother show all the time, and it's very annoying. And I hate the fact that I have to listen to Matt and Akbar talk about their favorite teams and stuff.
Well, the good news is there's no hope for Akbar because he is a Raiders fan. But I'm ready for football, for what it's worth. I won't waste your time talking about it.
As I was saying that I hate football, Lita was like turning her head back and forth like, this is no good. And I see like the football tattoo on her neck. I'm like, oh, man,
I don't have a neck tattoo. Please don't tell that to the listeners. That is such a connotation. It's behind my ear.
Is it not? Oh, what? Oh, behind. Oh, I'm sorry. It's behind your ear. It's not on your neck.
Okay. The neck tattoo like has an image. I have the Steelers logo tattooed on my head. Any future employers who may be listening to this, disregard that.
it's fake. I made it all up.
Yeah, it's a temporary tattoo just to annoy Taryn. But yeah, I'm a diehard Steelers fan. And that is that. So I'm ready for football.
All right. Well, next up was Najee Richardson, the 25-year-old fitness coach. And I was very concerned for him because I had very high hopes coming from the Philadelphia finals. And the fact that he came right after Drew made me think, this can't be good. He can't be what I expect him to be if he's coming right off of another really good run. But as we sort of queued up before, they'd have these two runs right in succession. They're very, very successful, very interesting and fun runs. And I'm not complaining. I love watching Najee. I think he's really great. I think that very much like Drew, he has really, really great body control. And I think that he has a lot of talent for this. So I definitely will be keeping my eye out for Najee in the future.
Yeah, I think that this is the first run that I was just so, so excited about because I'm a big Drew Dreschel fan, obviously, who isn't, but I was kind of expecting him to finish. I mean, I guess you can never say that based on how many veterans we've seen go out.
That's why he has so much pressure on him, because of people like you.
Yeah, well, I just kind of, you know, maybe took it for granted a little bit. I thought that Drew would finish, but Najee is the first person that I was, you know, he's new at this. We don't really know too much about what to expect of him, how consistent he is. But I really, really love him. I think he's so charming. And I love his parents. I just am a huge fan of his.
Yeah, he does get hung up on the propeller bar. He misses the rope and wastes a bunch of time and also strength, to be honest. And he also gets hung up at the sonic curve. But despite this, he still manages to clear pretty easily. And I think that's just a testament to his control and his ability. And so, yeah, as I mentioned, I'm really looking forward to what he's capable of in stage two and beyond, just in his career in general.
Yes, indeed.
Next up is another montage. First was Chris Workman, the app developer. He couldn't handle the dismount on the propeller bar. And Matt says, unfortunately, there's no app for a do-over.
I mean, that like depends on what you're doing, right?
Well, no do-over for American Ninja Warrior, that's for sure.
I feel like there are apps that you can...
Well, maybe there is an app for a do-over on American Ninja Warrior. It's just one of those apps that's like, oh, now you have a timer and you have to wait a year for to play again, unless you pay us money. But next was Eric Middleton, who flew like a butterfly because he's a bug scientist.
And I was thanking the American Ninja Warrior gods that we didn't get another package. No shade at him. I just don't want to see any more bugs.
He does run out of time and fails at the flying squirrel. Maybe the squirrel eats the butterfly or something like that. And then finally, Nicholas Coolidge, who clears. He's our first montage clear of stage one, really, I think.
Yeah, like, that's a choice, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and a Nick Coolidge of all people, who is typically a fairly entertaining competitor, but it is the way that it is. Next up, we got Megan Martin, the 26-year-old climbing coach, and she had a package this time about having a rivalry with Jesse Graff that I feel like was just completely manufactured by the edit, right?
I really didn't like this. Well, first of all, I didn't like anything about the way that Megan Martin was treated, because we already knew she was going to flame out because of they didn't hype her at all. And yeah, they were hyping up Casey more than Megan. So I knew that this wasn't going to be a great run. But I really did not like this package because they made up that they have a rivalry with each other. We have no evidence that they have any sort of friendly rivalry.
Yeah, exactly. And it was basically just like, here's the history of Jesse Graff and Megan Martin.
Yeah, they are both girls who do this sport.
Like, yeah.
Okay.
She does, however, lose her grip on the log grip, which is very unfortunate. I feel like she says it's just an off day. Ian, when he was talking with us, he talked about how it was just kind of a negative vibe there in Vegas for this first stage. And maybe that kind of got to her as well. We saw a lot of people have a lot of slip ups here. And I think probably all of that sort of contributed to her failure here. I think that, you know, she says that she, on her way down, she felt like she could get thrown off onto the mat. But again, just either a misjudgment or a slip of the grip, something happens here and she goes into the water.
Well, I can shed a little bit of light on that. I follow Megan on Instagram, and she posted a picture from her run, and she said that she remembers laying there the night before, going to sleep the night before her run, and thinking, I'm so sick, I'm not going to be able to run tomorrow. I'm too sick to do this. And so she went out there and did it. She didn't mention it on the show because I feel like that sounds like that could sound like a cop out if you were over with Chrissy and was like, well, I'm sick. Like, and it wasn't anything. She wasn't making excuses or anything. She was saying, everybody has setbacks. I'm so glad I went out and did it. Go and face your fears head on, even if you think you can't do it, that type of thing.
Yeah, and really, if you are an accomplished veteran on this season, I feel like this is the season to fail, right? Because many others did. So it's like, you're in good company, right?
Yeah, and even other Wolfpack members. Yeah. So she has that support system. But yeah, so she was sick, which is really unfortunate. But I really thought that if they were going to hype up Jeff Britton this much, clearly, like, they think it's okay to hype up people who don't do well. So I still feel like she should have gotten a little bit more.
I feel like you have to choose one, right? You hype up one person, and that you don't hype up two people and have both of them fail. So I sort of understand where that's coming from.
Well, they were hyping Casey too.
That's true. And but not, they always hype Casey.
Doesn't deserve that. No, I know, but I just feel like they could have mentioned her at least once. And the other thing about the package, talking about Jesse, was that I feel like it just even more pushed the narrative that, like, Jesse is in this class of her own. That's like, look, these two have been neck and neck the whole time, but now it puts even more emphasis on Jesse. And I just don't really like that. I don't feel like we need to have just one woman to be the female ambassador to American Ninja Warrior. And I feel like sometimes they try to do that and put all their eggs on Jesse Graff, at least this season.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last episode. They are definitely really pushing hard on the Jesse thing, and I understand it, but I wish that they would take their foot off the pedal a little bit.
Yeah, I just don't want their love for Jesse to come at the detriment of people like Megan.
I'm sure they have plenty of love to go around, except when it comes to their $1 million prize.
Only one million dollars.
But next up is Neil Craver, the 35-year-old photographer who has a package about this new girl that he's dating, finally.
So I'm completely face blind. And is he dating a new girl every year, or?
No, we talked about this. He was dating Grace Sims now.
Yeah.
Because she married Brett Sims. And now he is dating, I didn't write her name down, but this new yoga teacher who balances out his crazy, he says.
I, for some reason, thought that there was even a girl in between those two.
No, I don't think so.
She is very beautiful. All of these ninjas have, yeah, like, these gorgeous girlfriends and wives.
Well, I mean, they're gorgeous themselves, no?
I mean, yeah, some of them.
Well, now it seems like you're specifically referring to a few people.
I'm sometimes surprised by the way that these wives and girlfriends look, but good for Neil Craver.
Yeah. He has a fast pace through most of the course, and he ends up clearing the whole thing. There really, again, not many mistakes here, and he ends up swimming on top of the buzzer.
Yeah, and the closest call he has the entire time is, like, he gets off the log grip onto the floating platform and just, like, stepping from there to the runway to the next obstacle, he trips. That would be, like, the worst way to go out ever.
Right? Like, it looks so hard to go from the mat to that little platform. There's a huge gap there, and you can't like, jump or anything. You just have to awkwardly stretch across and just, like, be like, yep, okay, there we go, I'm on.
Yeah, I mean,
like, nobody did that gracefully.
Yeah, it's, like, the same thing as, like, when you're, like, on a lake and getting onto a raft from a dock or something. It's, like, very difficult.
Exactly. But next up, we have Nick Kostreski, the 29-year-old aerospace engineer. And this is what I'm talking about with these engineers. They're just all over the place. We get a package about his job and, of course, how it'll help him on the course. And he calls himself the KO Ninja, but I don't think they ever explained why.
I don't know. His wife is a knockout. He's another person that, very beautiful wife.
I mean, he was dressed up in, like, a boxing getup. I assume he boxes and that's why he calls himself the KO Ninja, but we didn't get a package about that. So, I mean,
I don't know.
Multifaceted guy, I guess.
Yeah, he's here
to
prove.
Maybe he just pretends to be. Just pretends to be a great boxer and aerospace engineer and ninja warrior.
Yeah, well, he's here to prove that a nerd can conquer Mount Midoriyama, which, you know,
I mean,
it's a good mission.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. He sits down at the sonic curve. This was an interesting move. He's swinging across on the rope and, like many people, can't get onto the platform. So he backs up and he gets on top of one of those sonic curve platforms and then pushes off from there. Which I don't think was the most efficient way of handling that, but it was certainly more efficient than the people who go back and forth a billion times.
Yeah, it was just frustrating to see him, like, sit down when this was going to come so close to the wire. And, you know, I guess he had no way of knowing how close it would come when he timed out. But there was a lot of things that I'm sure he looks back on that could have been a lot tighter. And that was one of those things.
Yeah. And he starts the flying squirrel with 20 seconds left. And you know, at that point, unless he really just flies across this thing, he is not going to be able to complete it in time. And he does. He times out at the top of the cargo net, typically where most people have been timing out. And that's it for Nick.
R.I.P.
Next was Casey Catanzaro, the 26-year-old gym owner, and her package, not about Brent at all, of course. It was the redemption package, and I feel like we've kind of gotten this package for Casey quite a few times in a row now, because she wants to make a comeback, and she hasn't quite made that comeback yet. And really, unfortunately, goes out at the same spot that she has gone out the past two times in Vegas.
Yeah. And it was so unfortunate because she, like, right as Akbar was finishing the sentence, she has to redeem herself. She misses and falls into the water. It's just such bad timing.
Yeah. You know, like I said, this propeller bar, it's so difficult, especially for somebody as short as Casey. You see her take that trampoline almost perfectly. She just doesn't get enough height and she can't reach those propellers. You know, somebody who is a foot taller who competes on this course would have been able to grab the propeller bar with the jump that she was able to do, but she's not able to reach and she does a backflip into the water.
Yeah. The good thing though is that she has a much more positive attitude coming out of this than she did. I don't know if attitude is the right word. She was rightfully very distressed last year, but I think that this isn't her first defeat. She's sort of learned how to deal with it. And I honestly think the further that she gets from this legend status and this pressure that she has on her, the better she's going to feel and maybe the better she's going to do.
Yeah. And honestly, I think it really also sort of demonstrates the difference between the small slip up and the I did my best, but couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Because the past two times she has messed up on the jump. She's either overshot it or undershot it and hasn't even come close. And it's just been like, oh man, I just had a small slip up and wasn't able to do it. But this time she hits the trampoline right. She just can't reach the propeller. And I feel like that's a lot easier to take because she knows that it wasn't just a small slip up. It was that, you know, she just didn't quite have it in her in that moment, as opposed to, again, like just, you know, overshooting the trampoline and going straight into the water, because I feel like that's a lot more devastating than, oh man, okay, I know what I, she probably knows what she did wrong there and can say, okay, now I know how to fix it. And maybe next year I can come back and do better.
Yeah. And she even said, you know, I did improve from last year.
Right. Yes, she definitely did. And honestly, I have high hopes for her now, because like you said, the fact that she was now able to hit this thing, she's further removed from all this pressure. I think that we're going to start to see a more confident and more capable Casey in the future. You know, we saw her do really well in Sasuke this year as well. So I think she's going to be definitely making this comeback finally, and maybe there won't be as much pressure around it and she can hopefully do better. Next up, another montage. First was Adam Arnold, who was out on the log grip. Then Carl Fantuzzo, who failed at Sonic Curve. And finally, Ethan Swanson, who finishes the course. He was the daredevil, and we skipped his run.
Oh, yeah, the YouTube video guy.
Yes, but now we have the man, Joe Morovsky, the 27-year-old meteorologist, and has another heartwarming package. I feel like this is the season of Joe sort of changing his image, where we got a package about being a father and how that's really emotional in qualifying. And this time we get a package about him meeting people who have changed his life. Especially children, you know, all sorts of different people who have sort of changed his perspective on life and through American Ninja Warrior and all of that. And, you know, this is great stuff from Joe.
I don't know if this was as much heartwarming for me as it was like soul crushing, the story about this little girl.
It's interesting though that like it's nice to hear that she's able to touch people in the way that she does, right? Like she's able to make this impression on Joe, and you know, he didn't really talk about how he's changed his life, but I think it means something that she was able to make an impression. She was able to do something really meaningful in her life, which, you know, is small consolation for sure. But I think there is something heartwarming about it.
Yeah. In case people don't remember, Joe was talking about this little girl who reached out to him because she was a huge fan of the show and a huge fan of him. And she was suffering from cancer and passed away recently, but she got to hang out with Joe. And so it was sort of a setup to Joe's life now as a role model.
Yeah.
And not just an athlete and a father, but someone who touches a lot of people's lives.
So he takes on this course and, you know, does really well as he would. He starts slowing down toward the end, but he starts taking really long breaks. This seems like a really exhausting course. He does almost fall on Broken Bridge, but he does end up getting to Flying Squirrel and getting through it in time. And he does manage to finish.
Yeah, I mean, the only surprise here to me was that he cut it closer than I would have imagined, but it still wasn't. I mean, he had like 8 seconds.
Yep. Next up was Jeff Britton, the 36-year-old cameraman and the first American Ninja Warrior. This one, I don't even want to.
I know. I was so confused because he was like the one person that like they were hyping up the most out of anybody this whole episode.
Yeah, it felt like they had to do something, right? Like I'm glad, you know, you have to hype up the person that beat the course last year. So I get that. And there's not a whole lot they can do about him failing that early, except for make the obstacles better.
I think it was an appropriate amount of hype, except like the little individual interview with Christine, I feel like really set me up to believe, oh, they're doing the little interview like they did with Jesse Graff.
Yeah.
The Danica Patrick.
Well, here's the thing, though. The fact that he was second to last, that Jake Murray ran after him, really scared me.
Yeah, that is true.
And the thing that I didn't like about, and we've talked about this before, but the whole redemption angle was just weird to me. I didn't like how they portrayed that. I understand that they have a television show to make, but it's just like, portray the dude as who he is, right? You know, you don't need to make a new storyline up for him. You can just, it's fine that he just wants to have fun out there. Like, you don't need to spice that up. He's the champion. Like, any storyline you have for him is going to be great.
Yeah. And one thing that I was wondering, so he goes out on Snake Run and all of us are not okay. And then he goes and does an interview, and the way that he's speaking, I was wondering, is he going to come back next year? Just the way that he was talking about it. And he posted on Instagram today that he will not be coming back next year. So This was Jeff Britton's swan song.
Yes, he posted, I think, in a few different places, but I see it on Facebook. He said, "Thanks for the love, everyone. Huge congrats to those who moved on to stage two. It's been a wild ride leading up to the top of Mount Midoriyama. I won't be back next season. Being on TV just isn't my thing. I keep telling everyone that maybe I'll give it a shot again when I'm 40, because why not? Smile. Enjoy what you're doing and get outside." This is sad, I think.
Yes, this is. I feel like, you know, I obviously have no idea what's going on in his head, but I feel like this narrative that they were pushing and all these questions that were asking that they were asking him over and over again, I feel like he was getting frustrated with the way that they were portraying him a little bit, and that might have contributed to his decision.
Yeah, I think that's completely true. I think he's pointing specifically to the fact that it's the being on TV is the part that he is not super interested in. I think he said he will still compete in the what is it called, the American Ninja League or something? What was it? National Ninja League, which it's run by Chris Wilczewski, I believe. And he won it last time, the first time they played it. And I believe Drew came in second. So yeah, Drew. But I do think he's still interested in doing those things. And I think he might also be, this is speculation based on what I've seen other people say, he might still be interested in competing in Sasuke. I know that they want him there. So this might not be the last we see of Jeff entirely, but it definitely seems as though he is not a huge fan of the edited show of American Ninja Warrior. He said specifically in his post that he's not interested in being on a TV show. I've seen him say elsewhere that it feels more of that he signed up for, you know, an obstacle course, not a reality show. And he says it feels more and more like a reality show. And I can understand why. Like, they're putting motives in his head. Like, they're ascribing motive to him that he does not have. And he is doing everything in his power. Every single time you see him speak, it's saying the complete opposite of what they're editing him to be. And I completely respect the fact that he doesn't want to be on TV, especially on a show like this, where you have very little control and you get very little for what you give to the show, especially like he is the poster boy for this because he won and got nothing.
Yeah.
So I completely respect it. It's very sad to me that he's not going to be back, because he's been one of my favorites and I love watching him compete. But, you know, you can't force someone to do it. And like I said, I respect his decision. So it's sad, but it's what he wants.
Yeah. And we must keep in mind that he says he doesn't like being on TV. We have no information about whether or not he likes being on podcasts. So we'll just have to change the name for 1 week to reality show. I mean, obstacle course for Hapup.
Yes.
He doesn't want to be affiliated with the reality show.
I think that another part of it is that the whole thing with Jeff sort of, like, and I understand this too, it introduced him to this drama, this controversy that, like, he won, and it not only did he not get $1 million, but he got this huge controversy all around him. You know, people are constantly talking about, is it Jeff? Is it Isaac? And, you know, again, from what I've read, it sounds like there's been conflict between him and Isaac, because Isaac isn't a huge fan of the fact that Jeff also won. And so it's like, I can, as somebody who doesn't really do drama myself, it can be very frustrating to be thrust into this position where all of a sudden people are talking about you and having drama with you when you just want to exist, right? So I completely understand where he's coming from. And again, it's unfortunate that he's put in this situation, both by the, you know, potentially the other athletes and by the show itself.
As a complete drama queen, I don't relate to this, and I will happily take the title of American Ninja Warrior, controversy and all.
I mean, that's why you're on here with me. We need both perspectives.
Yes. And I do want to mention, because I tweet this every week, underreported how handsome Jeff Britton is. Just want to throw that out there.
Not underreported to me. I think every time I mention Jeff's name to Brent, who I referenced quite a lot in this podcast, he also watches American Ninja Warrior, and he lets me know quite often how thirsty he is for Jeff Britton.
Oh, so. I had no idea. I thought that this was more of a little bit of a hotter take. Oh, well. Me and Brent, we just get it. Something about podcasting with you puts us in the same mindset.
I mean, I get it, too. Like, he's a handsome dude. But I think that's all we really have. Jeff, I remember last season he talked a lot about how the agility / balance obstacles always had him the most nervous because they are the ones where he felt that he was weakest, because you can't use the incredible strength and ability that he has to do all of the other obstacles. So if he went out on any obstacle, it's not super surprising that it's like pretty much the only agility one in the entire course, except for Broken Bridge. That said, it's still disappointing. It's still upsetting. I was really glad that he had a smile on his face as he came out, even though Christine really wanted him to be upset.
Yeah, he came out of the water saying everybody falls. You
exactly. That's very true of American Ninja Warrior and Ninja Warrior. Like the legends of Sasuke have fallen plenty of times. The only guy to have ever completed all four stages in Sasuke has failed like a bunch of times in a row in stage one. Like it happens, and nobody should be ashamed of it. And I'm glad that he doesn't feel ashamed of it. Like he's feeling like, yeah, this is what happens, and it's fine.
Yeah. And we will always love him, and yes, America will always love him.
Of course. And I'm really happy that he was able to go out the way that he did, with Matt constantly calling him the first American Ninja Warrior. He got a package about being the first one up. And I think I'm really glad that he stuck with the show for at least one more season, even if he wasn't super happy with how he was treated. And that's pure speculation. Despite his feelings toward the show, I'm glad that he stuck around for one more shot. And I do hope that he comes back eventually, but I would completely understand if he didn't.
Yeah, he says he'll come. He would think about coming back when he's 40. How old is he now?
He is 36.
Okay, so American Ninja Warrior 12.
Right?
Yeah. See you then, Jeff.
Our final runner of the night is Jake Murray, the 29-year-old wedding photographer. And he had, I think, probably the best package we've seen all season.
Golden boy with his golden hair.
Yeah, like his previous one was all about his car and how great it was. And this one was just packed with testimonials. Like, Jake Murray is the best person I've ever met, and he should be king of the world. And like this is like golden boy edit to the extreme this season. And it came out of nowhere. Like I said, the first time we got a package for him, I was saying, I think this is the first time we've had a package for Jake Murray. And it has just exploded. I hope that it wasn't just leading up to the corn dog, great as it was, but
is it? We'll
hopefully,
talk about it.
Hopefully it means that he goes on a really good run here. And it's not just the goofiness that they're trying to highlight, but yeah, he did have a very impressive run.
But did you know that he jumped into the water after he finished one time? I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, it was crazy. It was so unexpected. You never know what this guy is going to do.
Oh, yeah. You know, now that you're saying that, I feel like they might have shown it like once or five, six times.
Yeah,
maybe?
Something like that.
Yeah.
He's crazy.
He wears a fanny pack throughout his entire run. He speeds through the course, gets there, taps the buzzer, fastest time by quite a bit. And
7 seconds.
Yeah, that's, I mean, he deserves the edit so far. Certainly he's done very, very well this season. He had the fastest time of the entire stage, entire stage one. And I mean, what can you say? You know, he then takes out his goggles, takes out the corn dog, takes a bite, and jumps into the water again.
I think he was just trying to prove that he like really is a madman, because you're not supposed to swim right after you eat. And he's just like, I don't listen to anybody. I don't listen to any rules. I eat my corn dog and then swim.
I think this is again a case, and not like, again, I don't think I'm as down on this as you are, but I think this is the case where the less hyped up he had been, the more this would have landed, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like Matt and Akbar, like, just losing their minds over this kind of takes away a little bit from, like, the quirkiness of it, right?
You know what would have been much better? If it was tater tots instead of a corn dog, go for the Napoleon Dynamite reference. I feel like that would have landed better.
I don't know.
I
feel like Napoleon Dynamite reference is well overdone at this point.
It would have landed better with me, but that's not the obvious one. It's not like he does the dance at the end. I just feel like tater tots would have been better. Also, corn dogs are disgusting.
Well, he didn't eat too much of it.
Yeah, and he said it was 10 hours old, which, like, I don't know if that even makes a difference with something that processed, but...
Maybe. Akbar says, get your ketchup ready, because he's all about that business, baby.
Much like ketchup. You know how ketchup is so business-oriented.
I was very confused about this, because A, I think ketchup is disgusting, and B...
Me too! Taryn, this is a huge common ground between us. I'm glad that we've finally breached the subject.
Seriously, who likes ketchup?
It's like, pasta,
I don't understand this.
Bad.
It's gross. It's, like, so gross. Anything that touches ketchup is just, like, it's dead to me.
This is going
to
be our one-star reviews rolling in, like, these ketchup haters.
Yeah, people put ketchup on everything. It's like, what's wrong with you?
I know, and I'm from the place where Heinz is made. It's Pennsylvania. It's the home of Heinz.
It's like in the air there. Gross.
I know. I feel like Akbar also made a reference about how he's, like, relishing this opportunity or something.
Yeah, he did another ketchup one.
Oh, okay.
I didn't write this one down because it was basically a rehash of the first one, but it was something like, get your ketchup ready because he's relishing this opportunity to do, I don't know, start a revolution or something.
It will be televised. Have you heard? It won't stay in Vegas. It won't.
And of course, this is the Palm Wonderful, crazy healthy run of the night for Jake Murray.
I wish that they would stop saving these for the last one.
Yeah.
They don't always. Just in the last couple of weeks, it's been the last one.
Yeah, and at this point, you know that Jake Murray is going to finish because you don't do Jeff Britton failing and then Jake Murray failing last. Like, you know, plus the magnificent package. So I not that I would have been concerned anyway, but it absolutely just spoils the run. You know that it's not only is he going to finish, but he's going to finish probably with the fastest time and probably in some sort of style that is going to be appeasing to an audience.
Yeah. Is Jake Murray officially a member of the Wolfpack, or does he just train with them?
I believe he trains with, I think the official members of the Wolfpack are the four that are on the Wolfpack Ninja podcast. And then they have, like, affiliate athletes who train with them and are great friends with them and can be considered, like, Wolfpackians probably, but
Wolfpack adjacent.
Yes.
Wolf crowd rather than the core pack.
Wolf pups, maybe.
No, that's what Ian is.
Oh yeah. Right. That he is. Yeah. He is the wolf pup.
Like Wolfpack satellite campuses.
Yeah. Not that that means that they're any lesser, obviously. I mean, Jake Murray gets the fastest time of the night here. But from what I know of my Wolfpack lore, I believe it is structured in that way.
See.
So that is it. That is our episode. It's been a rough couple of stage one episodes here. We've talked about it extensively at this point. But stage two is always exciting. I'm excited to see some revamped obstacles. I'm excited to see Drew Dreschel. I'm excited to see Joe Morovsky. Obviously, very excited to see Jesse Graff. Honestly, if this were the regular stage two that from last season and it wasn't totally revamped like it might be, I would say Jesse Graff has a very real shot at making stage three. With the new changes, who knows? Because there might be some crazy new obstacles that just, like, take out everyone.
Yeah, there might just be, like, a roulette wheel where you spin it and it's like the Wheel of Fortune. You can just get bankrupt and then you have to jump into the water. You never know with these courses.
The big killer on stage two has generally been the, you know, obviously either the salmon ladder into the unstable bridge, I think it's called, and the roulette wheel. Roulette. And I think that those are both things that Jessie can do. So I really think she'd have a good shot at it. But with the changes, if the body prop is in stage two, that's ridiculous. I hope it's a stage three one. But yeah, even with the changes, I think Jessie's definitely one to look out for. But part of me says they hyped up her stage one run so much that there's not really anywhere left to go.
That's what I'm thinking as well.
That's sort of the only, you know, reading into the edit, that's where it might be headed. But I think if you just look at her athleticism and this, what we've seen in stage two, I think that she's definitely capable of it.
Yeah. I would recommend, if people are maybe new to this show, watch stage two. Like, if you can watch the episode as it's airing, do that and try not to look at a clock, because I feel like I am always sort of like, oh, there's only enough time for, you know, this amount of people to go to stage three or whatever, because it's all in one night. I won't be able to do that. I'll be watching it on my DVR, and you have to fast forward and see how much time is left. But, you know, that is the optimal way to watch if you can do that.
That is very good advice, because it is definitely the major downside. And it happens in Sasuke as well, where it's very easy to tell how far people are going to get.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you see there's 10 minutes left in the episode and like nobody has, we haven't even done stage three yet. It's like, oh, guess who's failing in stage three?
Yeah, exactly. Right?
So yes, very, very useful tip there.
I mean, not to ruin it for any people. That's not necessarily true. Maybe some people just do it really fast, or if they get to stage four is super quick. So, you know, you can never totally tell.
You can.
I just don't want to ruin it for people who maybe hadn't thought of that. And now they're like, oh, now I think
we are the Michelle Truthers of American Ninja Warrior.
I don't know what that means.
You, what's Survivor?
Oh, Michelle Fitzgerald. I have Big Brother on the brain. And I was like,
There you go.
Okay. Yeah, I was a Michelle Truther from the very beginning.
I won the happy hour draft with Michelle, and it looks like I might win the Big Brother draft as well. So
mazel.
On a roll there.
Speaking of drafts, should we go into our questions? We had a question similar to this vein.
Let's do it.
Okay, you have them. I was just trying to do a smooth transition.
You did the transition.
I know, because I thought
was expecting
that
you to have the question.
I thought that you had them up when we were
talking.
Okay.
I do have them up. But I expected you to have them up. Well, quite frankly, I'm disappointed.
Taryn, my tabs, I have so many tabs and they're all so squished right now.
I'm kidding.
No, listen, this is important. Because
I don't care.
I have to see my notes and you, so I have to squish the Google Hangout, so I don't.
Well, you should do what I do and get like five monitors.
No.
Anyway, the question is from Alex Moran, the infamous questioner.
Infamous.
He asks, what did I say?
You said you said infamous. It's just a weird word to say. I feel like that has a negative connotation.
Oh, well, he is quite infinite. Because he's the only, anyway. He asks, of those left, if you could hand pick Team USA, the five who made it the furthest, who would it be?
Okay. Do we have to come to a consensus on that? I feel like we will. I feel like this is not going to be super controversial.
Well, yeah, let's try to come to a consensus here. I think obviously first choice, no brainer, Drew Dreschel.
Yes. Co-signed. I would go to Joe Moravsky after that. These are the people who are actually on Team USA in USA versus the World.
Right.
Do you want to go? I don't know. Do we want to go Jake Murray? Is he too still? He's still too green.
They're certainly building him up to be somebody that will be on Team America or Team USA. Yeah, Team America. So I think if I were picking who the producers will choose, I think Jake Murray is probably on that list. I'm not sure I would pick him. I think stage one is his wheelhouse, so it would certainly behoove them to have him to run stage one.
Okay, that's fair. Do we want to do maybe Daniel Gill?
Daniel Gill is a good choice. Oh man, it gets hard here because so many of the easy choices went out so early.
Yeah. So I would say, I'm just going to set up, I feel like the people that I have on my metaphorical board would be Daniel Gill, Grant McCartney, Brian Arnold.
Oh, Brian Arnold, obviously, yes.
Flip and Josh Levin has been good. I feel like we also haven't seen enough from him.
I think I'd take Najee over Josh.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have three slots left. What is your proposal?
All right. Well, so we've got Drew, we've got Joe. I think Brian Arnold's obvious choice. Mm-hmm. And then we've got two spots left. I do think Daniel Gill is probably a good choice there. Here's what I got.
Okay.
We got those first three, then Daniel Gill, and then Flip Rodriguez.
That is my exact list. I thought you weren't going to say Flip. I thought you might go Grant. But I think I love Flip.
I think I do like Grant a lot, but as Akbar and Matt like to point out, he's a big boy. Yeah. And he's had trouble in stage two, I think, because of his size before. So I think Flip is a little more rounded out.
And we didn't even mention Neil Craver. Would he be on your roster? He would not be on mine.
I mean, Neil's great, but I don't know if he's consistent enough.
Yeah. Also, Michael Torres, except we don't know anything about him because we were staring at your face during his run.
Well, he had a very exciting run in stage one, but all right. Another question by Alex Moran. Across these 2 weeks, what would be your top three most shocking / heartbreaking falls?
It's hard because I feel like the legends that went out really shockingly were like not necessarily my faves. And James McGrath didn't even get a package. Do you have an answer?
Well, I think obviously Jeff is at the top of that
of
list.
Of course, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think that they do not a great job of, I mean, we've talked so much about how like we can sort of tell when someone's going to fall. So there weren't a ton of huge shockers for me. I feel like I was more shocked by people, not that they didn't finish, but just how early they went out. So someone like Lucas Gomez, who had this like amazing package and this incredible story to get there, who goes out on the first obstacle. I think I was just surprised with people who went out that early, more so than I was surprised with people who didn't finish. I think I was probably most surprised by Kevin Bull, actually.
Yeah, I think for me, I think it's Jeff and Ian.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Were two that I was very shocked and very heartbroken for. And I was also kind of a little bit shocked and a little bit heartbroken at the Giants. I felt like he was almost there, and I really felt like he could have had it. So that one really hurt.
Yeah. And I'll throw in, Travis Rosen and John Stewart as well. Mm-hmm.
All right. Any more questions?
So Will Seaman asked, do you think it was a waste using all the wildcard spots on women who didn't demonstrate much ability rather than proven ninjas who got unlucky? So we've talked about this a little bit about, all the wildcards being women. I think that waste is the wrong word. I feel like you can't necessarily like waste a spot. I feel like anyone can surprise us and show us something. And I think that I respect what they're trying to do because in general, women get fewer opportunities in sports and are not as encouraged to do sports. So it's nice to have a place where they're actively encouraging women to get another shot. That said, I think that I would have been fine having many of the spots be women, even if they weren't necessarily the most outstanding performance in the qualifiers. But I would not have had an issue with some people who just had a little slip or a mistake or something like that, who we know are more capable. But I don't think it was a waste. I don't, you know, necessarily disagree with the decision. I would have been fine either way.
You listeners saw or listened to my initial reaction at hearing the wild cards, and I wasn't super high on the idea before, and I feel like I'm even lower on the idea now, having seen it play out. I feel like for the most part, we skipped over most of the women, and you know, we saw a couple of them run, and those were the ones that we probably would have seen anyway if they hadn't done that with the wild cards. Certainly, like there are like people like Casey, and people like maybe even the Machine. Like there are some that you would have expected to get wild cards regardless, and we saw them run. And the people that you wouldn't have necessarily remembered in the first place, we didn't even see run. So it does kind of feel like why even bother? Like, why are we bringing them here to not be successful and not even show them run? It seems like they do just kind of want to throw as many women at the course as possible and then just hope that one breaks through. But generally, I feel like from what we've seen, the people that qualify are the people that are much more likely to make it through anyway. And the people that we've seen be very successful are the people that would have gotten wild card spots if they had slipped up in the first place. So I don't think it's as necessary as they think it is to bring all women into the wild card spots. I think that there are plenty of people like David Campbell or JJ Woods or some other people who just, you know, they spend a whole lot of time training. They have one slip up in qualifying and they don't even get a spot because they want to give it to somebody that they're not even going to show on the episode.
Yeah. But I think like that said, the payoff as a viewer and like for the show if one of those women does come out and stun and do it, I mean, that's so huge. That's such a big TV moment. Whereas for them, maybe the payoff for someone who, even if they could finish stage one, it's like, if people don't really know who they are, or they're someone that the show doesn't necessarily want to promote, or have like a super interesting story or whatever, that payoff for them is like, well, we'd rather see like a woman go pretty far than see like some rando finish. That's not to say that every person that they could have that's not a woman is some rando. I just think that for them, like you said, they want to throw as many women as at the course as possible, because if one does pull off this shocking victory, it would just be so amazing.
Yeah, I guess for me, it's like, it's sort of the same thing as the Jesse Graff thing, where I feel like they just really, really, really want this, you know, a woman succeeds and this can go viral and we'll get a lot of press from it. It's what happened with Casey. It's what got a lot of success for our show. We want to recreate that moment. And I feel like it's short-term thinking. I feel like this all ties back into the same thing that we've been talking about all season, where they don't really respect their vets. They don't ask a lot of them, all of them back. And they're not as concerned about keeping consistent characters throughout the entire run of the show, which I personally feel is important for the longevity of the show. And they let these people go by the wayside. And that's what I feel the wild card should be for, is to bring back the memorable characters, the entertaining ones, but also the ones that slipped and that wouldn't otherwise get a chance. They did this with Brent a few seasons ago. You bring back the stars of your show and respect the stars of your show more, because I really do think that they are the success of the show. And if you go too far away from that, and you only chase after the viral moment of like, oh yes, we finally threw enough women at the course to that, and now one has succeeded, I genuinely feel like it'll give you more long term success than that other, you know, strategy essentially.
All right, Taryn's low on it. I'm fine with it. I think more opportunities for women are always a good thing.
Well, except in this case, I guess. All right, so I think that is all we've got for questions. We will be talking to you next week about the finale of season 8 of American Ninja Warrior. Very excited to see stage 2 and 3. Probably not stage 4, but we'll see.
Not with that attitude.
I believe we have a review to read, because you lovely listeners have been leaving us lots of reviews. I am very, very thankful. This is really great. The final push for the podcast.
Okay. Yes, we got so many nice reviews this week. Like Casey, our fan base is small but mighty, and please keep doing it. It brightens my day. I just moved to college. It's a really stressful time, and checking these reviews really is wonderful for me. So it was hard to choose one to read, but this is called The Palm Wonderful, Crazy, Beautiful, Amazing, Awesome Podcast by Radio Free, 5 stars. And they say, this is a great podcast for anybody who loves American Ninja Warrior, but is a not so casual TV fan. Getting context, history, and a perspective from people who get it is something that I love. They are an awesome pair with killer chemistry. 12 out of 10, would recommend. Thank you.
You probably should work on the math skills, but otherwise, great, great review. Thank you.
No, 10 wouldn't have been good enough. In reality TV numbers, that's like nothing. Like 150 to 200% satisfied with this podcast. Not good enough. 12 out of 10 is great.
It's such a dirty reference.
People who get it will get it, and people who won't.
Anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. We've really enjoyed talking with you all season long, and very, very excited to talk about the finale. See what happens. See Drew Dreschel kill it and make it further than anyone else, because that's totally what I expect to happen. But Joe might give him a run for his money. I feel like this is Joe's season to finally conquer that cliffhanger.
We shall see.
We shall. So yes, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Armstrong Taryn. Lita is at Lita Tweeted. Tweet us responses to the podcast, to the episode. Leave us questions. We'll talk about you instead of just Alex Moran and occasionally Will Seaman. And you can find us on iTunes, American Ninja Warrior Rehap Ups. You can also subscribe to the Reality TV Rehap Up feed, where you can get all sorts of other great podcasts. like the reality TV Rehappy Hour. We love these puns. I'm sure it makes it really easy to find us on iTunes as well. So just do the search. It's RHAP in all of those fun little puns. Leave us a review, as we mentioned. It's very, very helpful, and it's very, very appreciated. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.